We're going to jump right into today's episode of the Empower Up podcast, but don't forget, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Welcome to the Empower Up podcast, everybody. I'm Jeremy Boren, Gray Matters brand manager. I'm here alongside Scott Christensen, our cyber practice director. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you, Jeremy. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. So lots to cover today, as there always is in the world of OT cybersecurity, industrial cybersecurity. But we wanted to start things off, and I wanted to ask you quickly about the Transform Cyber Summit that Gray Matter is planning for the beginning of November. It's the first time we've dedicated an entire virtual event to a single topic. And I think it's no surprise that it's cybersecurity because of how important it is, especially now with so many people working remotely and doing things a little bit differently because of the pandemic. So I wanted to ask you, Scott, I know it was a priority of yours to work on the summit. Why was it important to get people together to talk at this point in the year, you know, on the heels of Cybersecurity Awareness Month in October?
Yeah, I think there's a couple big reasons, right? One is we're starting to get to that Q4 push and we're starting to put our plans together for next year. And start, as you start to identify where the areas and the targets you're going to focus on, I think this is a good time to talk to your peers and understand what other people are kind of doing to approach them. What are the things that they're looking at and investigating so that you know what's a good way to put it on your roadmap? And then secondly, as you said, this is the first time we've dedicated to one event. And it seems to be when we've hosted other virtual events, cyber always runs long and always has a high volume. So we started thinking about how can we dedicate more conversations around cybersecurity as is attached to kind of operational environments and the bigger, you know, digital transformation story and where does cybersecurity belong? So it's kind of a way for us to just focus on kind of the risks and how people are approaching it.
There's kind of an advocacy element to it as well, because I think so many of the cybersecurity conferences, summits that happen out there are focused solely on IT or mostly on IT. And since OT is our space, I feel like we need to speak up and talk about OT issues because, you know, they're important to us and we want to make sure that that's understood and carve that out for folks who, you know, are trying to fight for resources on the OT side, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's the redheaded stepchild approach sometimes, right? We don't always get the efforts. We're not always, but I always find it interesting because it's like, we're so similar, but we're not the same. And it's those minor differences that a lot of times trap and cause, you know, issues in bigger cyber programs when they don't take into account that pivot between IT and OT. And then the other aspect of it is we have to do more with less. You know, and it's ways that other people are carving it out. So you find a lot of people are being a little bit more creative as they approach cybersecurity and OT. And it's always great to kind of share what other customers have kind of thought up and what do they see as their perspective on how to focus on cybersecurity threats in the greater OT world.
Right. And getting those perspectives is super important during this summit. The way that we've structured it, it leads off with two live panels that Scott's moderating. And, you know, we have different topics for each. You know, one is about making OT cyber an enabler rather than a disabler, which is a broad topic that gets a lot of different issues out on the table quickly. And then the other, the second live panel is more focused on regulations as they relate specifically to some of the industries that we serve all the time: water utility, energy, oil and gas. Some are required to do cyber audits and assessments, others aren't, but there's plenty of good tools out there that we deploy all the time that allow you to determine where you are in your maturity level. So those are the kind of two topics off the top, and then we're talking about a number of other things as well. So the live panel format, Scott, that kind of allows some open conversation, because I know in cybersecurity, there's a lot of strong opinions. There's a lot of, you know, beliefs. And, you know, rather than try to overstructure them, I think the idea that you talked about was, you know, allowing people to really get out there and talk about, you know, what they're thinking and trying now.
Exactly right. Yeah. So the first topic, right, changing from disabler to enable. So we're so used to cybersecurity telling us no, no, no. And that's kind of really the big driver for a lot of them is like, right, we're so used to, I can't do this, I can't do this. So what are the technologies and what are the things that allow me to do some of the other things? I always use the pandemic as a great argument about that, right? Is, you know, 7 months ago, 8 months ago, no one wanted to do remote connectivity to the plant floor. That was just a big no-no. It was just so rare to see that. Well, the pandemic kind of changed everyone's philosophy on that. So how do I allow it? But how do I allow it where as a security professional or someone who's responsible for security, how do I allow it in a way that makes me comfortable, you know, a way that I can sleep at night? And then the regulations, as we're seeing, they're not getting smaller. They're not being less. We're seeing a massive growth in regulations, whether it be NERC-SIP. We've got a new revision of that coming soon. The AWIA, when it comes to the water utility business. And then probably one of the bigger ones we're seeing a lot of manufacturers struggle with is CMMC, the government and NIST 171 regulations around anyone who sells, you know, things to the government, manufactures items to the government. Since regulation is so new in the manufacturing space, it's amazing, you know, how quickly people are trying to speed up, but they're struggling. There's a lot of people struggling, and I've not seen anyone who kind of solves it the same way. So I thought it'd be very beneficial to kind of have a conversation and kind of see the different approaches that are working and what's not working as people kind of look to approach compliance with standards, because I always make the discussion, you can be absolutely compliant and no more secure. So at the end of the day, how do I achieve compliance, but also security, that I'm using compliance as a driver for risk reduction?
For sure. And it is all about risk. I know that.
Absolutely.
So we were talking before about, another thing that got us thinking about the summit, and this connects in, is just, you know, some of the alerts that we've been seeing lately from NSA and CISA. There was one over the summer that really, raised my eyebrows because it seemed to apply so directly to U.S. civilian infrastructure that was being targeted, and that was the warning. But there's a new one out now too that really applies to industrial control systems.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
a little bit about that and your kind of view on it.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting what we're seeing as we're running up to the election. We're seeing we're seeing a massive increase in nation state attacking. And specifically with this one, it's a active persistent threat designed around taking advantage of weaknesses in ARM architecture, ARM processors. If you know anything about industrial environments, we rely very heavily on these ARM processors and PLCs and VFDs and Pi devices, tons of different devices across. So a specifically targeted, even if it's not technically targeted at critical infrastructure, it is still targeting some of the components that we use very heavily. We also saw over the summer a big warning about water utilities coming out of Israel, where we're starting to see all these advanced attacks originally attacking the water infrastructure in Israel. But the one thing we've learned over time is what's successful in other countries eventually comes here because we're such a good target. And with both the election and kind of all the challenges and everyone to interfere and, kind of have impact there, plus the potential for a transitionary government or even a continuation of this government, I think what we're seeing is a massive spike. And interestingly enough, I just read this morning that there's a 25% increase on ICS attacks in the first half of this year. That just came out in a study just recently that was published that we've actually seen, 90% of those attacks target HMIs and PLCs. It's kind of interesting to see that we've seen a quick uptick when everyone was home, when we thought everything was safe. Actually, we're seeing an uptick and increase in vulnerabilities and attacks.
And where are they coming from?
So all over, but I mean, your normal threat actors, right? North Korea is always, because you always got a concern with North Korea just because their economy is based on their ability to do these kind of attacks, whether it be the Sony attack or giant ransomware. North Korea really funds a lot of their government entities through a commercially black network of attacks. You also see things from other nation states like Iran, China, Russia, people who want to influence or even just impact day-to-day living here. And then, of course, you've got your larger organized crime entities that live pretty unfettered in a lot of your Eastern European countries. So you've kind of got your nation state sponsored by government, but you also have your large multinational organized crime, which in itself are almost as big and almost as impactful And they're definitely coming exterior. So we can usually kind of target, depending on what type of attack, where it came from.
Yeah, and that can be useful for, you know, the defensive aspect of things too, being able to geofence that out, block that out. And I mean, you know, when you talk about the motivations and, you know, organized crime and whatnot, I mean, they don't care what the target is. You know, we saw an alert, I think, this week that U.S. hospitals were being targeted by TrickBot was the name that was being given out. And, you know, of course, U.S. hospitals, like all hospitals, are dealing with a pandemic right now, but that doesn't matter to the bad actors out there.
Yeah, and if you follow the kind of the history of ransomware, me being the cyber nerd I am, I do. If you watch the way ransomware kind of matured, it grew out of the healthcare industry, but then quickly as healthcare tried to figure out methods for remediating, and I'm sure they'll get ahead of TrickBot eventually. What ended up happening is all that investment in writing the code for a piece of ransomware, they still have to find places where it can get profitable. And so they start pivoting for other areas. And if you remember, I talk about this all the time, that ransomware really doesn't care about the data itself. Most of the time, ransomware just looks for volumes of data. It's trying to just encrypt as much as it can, because the more data I can encrypt, the more I can ransom it back to you. So it's the more valuable the hostage is, right? So think about that in your infrastructure. Think about how much data we manage on a day-to-day. It's massive, huge scales. So how big a target would, you know, a manufacturer be, or a critical infrastructure piece, just knowing that we have, one, a reliance on these big flat layer two networks, but also the fact that we rely on huge volumes of data. And so having that target there, when eventually we see this pivot, and I'm predicting it now, when we see this pivot out of healthcare, it'll pivot in a couple different verticals, and we'll start to see it move from probably financials will be a good target. I think right now we're already seeing it pivot into kind of government systems, like election systems. But from there, it's a very easy pivot to things like water and critical infrastructure, or pivot into manufacturing and, you know, kind of those key components. So don't be surprised when you start to see something like TrickBot move around, because they'll remediate it and they'll get ahead of it eventually in the healthcare. Because once the impact is to the level that it's public, it becomes a priority to fix. But that investment in writing that code to creating that ransomware, they're going to look to try to get the most to maximize their dollars on that investment for creating it. So if you think it like a business, where's their next market economy? Hopefully it's not us, but I really don't count on using hope to protect my environments. I want to make sure I put things in place that allow me to get ahead of that, whether it's port blocking and segmentation, or encrypted technologies, or hardening communications, you know, the list. I want to get ahead. You want to be ahead, because you want to start mitigating yourself as a threat vector, because you don't want to be a target of opportunity.
Right. And there are a lot of alerts out there, and it can be hard to know, like, well, how much should I pay attention to one over the other? But the way I kind of look at it, and tell me your thoughts on this, is just, it's kind of like, if you're an investor, you really shouldn't pay attention to the daily fluctuations in the Dow Jones necessarily, if you really want to have like a long-term, you know, healthy investment portfolio. And I think it's maybe the same way with cyber, is that there are daily or intraday fluctuations in what's going on. And that's why you need to have a long-term strategy.
Exactly. So when you look at it, there's a couple things I preach pretty consistently when I start talking about. One is obviously risk reduction, right? So take my risk, if it's on a scale of 1 to 100, what is the most areas that I can do to accomplish reducing that 100 number, right? So you think about the 80-20 rule. If I can manage 80, then I'm only really worried about that 20%. So what are you doing? What are the things you can do to do the 80, right? Lock down your firewalls, put policy in place, put good controls in place, deploy zero trust infrastructure. All those kind of things really start to shrink your threat print. And then you're only looking at that 20%, those variables you're talking about. And then what you then do there is you measure it a couple ways. I look for, one, commonality, right? If I see 10 or 15 attacks that take advantage of the same vulnerability or the same threat vector, maybe I should look at it, because that, you know, for example, a few years ago, we had a bunch of processors on cellular devices that couldn't be patched. And all of a sudden we saw a proliferation of attacks. Got it that time. We saw a proliferation of attacks on radios. So a lot of times people couldn't think about it. So reduce your risk by patching or hardening the communication to your radios. That was a big thing. We've seen this in the past. And then the other is a prioritization. And this is where we often talk about assessment work and auditing work and a lot of things we talk about with customers and we do for customers. But the real value at the end of the day, there's value in the remediation and there's value in knowing where my vulnerabilities are. But if I don't come in and I don't give you a ranking of criticality of how likely this will impact your business, then you really don't get anything out of it because you have no direction and where to go. And so when you start thinking about that and you see these big lists of CVSSs, right, all these common vulnerabilities, they get released out. You see all these big 10 numbers and you think, oh, I got to prioritize those. Well, maybe, but really look at what that is and how that affects your environment. Like, for example, if they send out a big alert about Windows 7 devices being exposed, but I have no Windows 7 devices, going around trying to fix that hole doesn't really do anything for me. So really look at that. And I think that's kind of a good way. It's just like the stock market. You know, it's not that I have to invest in a specific stock, but if I'm watching a trend in a marketplace and I'm seeing success there, that's where I want to focus my effort, right? If I'm seeing a big success in internet stocks or if I'm seeing a big success in biotech, you know, I don't have to necessarily buy the top of the line. I don't necessarily have to throw all my money one, but I can see there's a trend there and take advantage of trends. It's the same thing we do in security. What are the trends? What are the attackers going for? That commonality, because most attacks aren't designed around uniqueness. They're not designed to be the first. They're designed to take advantage of someone else's effort. And we always use the term like script kiddies. These are not people who are great coders, but what they are is they're great at researching and looking for what can I take from a toolkit and use it to attack different environments. And those are the things you want to be aware of when you're kind of planning and prioritizing your vulnerability strategy.
Right. And that's just a great argument in favor of patching and being up to date on everything. Absolutely. You possibly can be. So you don't give people that just unforced error, you know?
Absolutely. We always joke about patching in OT. We got unpatched systems for decades. We all love to patch systems. That's very rarely a reason we don't patch it. The reason we don't patch it is I can't put things down. I can't take lines down to patch a system. That's just as impactful as a hack itself. So if I can't patch and I need to identify where I can't patch, I should have compensating controls in place, things that mitigate the risk from my unpatched system. You know, patching is obviously the best way because you're closing that door into your infrastructure. That being said, if you can't do that, have another plan in place for remediation and kind of mitigating the risk. Because as we talked about early on, it's all about risk. That's what we do. It's all about measuring risk and understanding risks. And then finding out what's acceptable for you, because it may be an acceptable risk to have an unpatched 20-year-old PLC. I just say, don't put it on the internet because that might not be acceptable. So really measuring that is important.
For sure. Well, Scott, thanks for the insights today. I just want to remind everybody about Transform Cyber on November 5th, 2020. And if you're hearing this after that date, don't worry. It will be available on demand for you after that date. You know, we'd love to have you live, but there's also an opportunity to check it out afterward. And, you know, if you want to get into a deeper conversation with us, there's plenty of ways to do that at graymattersystems.com. Any final thoughts, Scott?
Yeah, please. I think you kind of hit the nail. You know, please join us next week. I'd love having conversations. Reach out if you got any questions. We're always glad to support. And, you know, like I said, know your risk.
For sure. And a unique thing too, if you're hearing this before the conference, we will have a cam-to-cam opportunity at the end where we can get into one-on-one conversations. You know, basically your large Zoom room type style where attendees will have an opportunity to come up on stage and talk to folks just like we would if we were in person and could do a Q&A that way. So we're going to try to recreate a little bit of that with this summit as well. And I think it'll be cool to try it. So Scott, thanks again. And we'll see you on November 5th. Before we go today, just a quick reminder to rate and review us wherever you download your podcasts and visit us online at graymattersystems.com.